Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Another episode. Thank you guys for hanging out with us today. My name is Richard Kaufman. I'm your host, also known as the Comeback Coach. Guys, today we're going to have an excellent guest in. We're going to be talking about some fun stuff. We're going to be talking about business. We're going to be talking about his military career and some of the great things he did in uniform and better things out of the uniform. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Office Allies. If anybody needs a virtual assistant, especially nowadays, it's so hard to find a great virtual assistant. So go to officeallies.va. Her name is Lisa Bowers. Truly amazing. She takes care of all of my graphics, everything like that. Definitely check her out. Guys, this is going to be a great episode. I love talking to my veterans, but I also love talking to special operators. And my brother, John, is truly changing the game of business. And I'm so grateful to have him on. John, brother, how are you?
Hey, Richard, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, man, every day is a good day, brother. If I get to wake up and get to be a daddy and a husband, I'm having a good day.
Agreed. Yeah, same here. Yeah, it's another beautiful day here in Colorado. And, yeah, I can say the same. Being a husband and a dad is the best.
So what's on your agenda for today? What you got going on?
Well, I was down at the shop this morning, just up to my elbows and car parts and grease and, working on the latest project with the business. And, just going to be out and about running some errands for the business, just staying busy, grinding as usual.
Okay. So now tell us a little bit about where you're from, you know, where you were born and what kind of little kid was John as a little boy?
So, I'm originally from Auburn, Alabama, home of Auburn University. My folks actually met in school there. Dad was from Iowa, from a big family, big blue collar family there. They were big into sports. My dad was a quarterback actually at the university. And my mom is an Air Force brat. They moved all over the world. Her dad was a career officer in the military, and then her brother later became a career officer in the military as well. So I like to think I get my athleticism and some leadership influences from my dad's family and that military influence from my mom's. Life was pretty, I'd say pretty normal. I played all the regular youth sports as a kid. I was big into the Boy Scouts, later became a Eagle Scout with that.
Now I got a question to ask you, because like I said, who knows where these conversations go, but it's like two brothers having a cup of coffee together. I have a nephew right now. He's almost to the part where he gets his Eagle Scout, but he's kind of dragging his feet. So I'm going to send this to him. What door has any doors opened up to you because of being an Eagle Scout?
100%. Yeah. I think that, that sense of selfless service, that sense of service to the community that Scouts instills, in you at a young age, pays dividends in life. Not only does it show that you're able to accomplish, you know, a great task at a young age, but it also helps you to kind of start getting dialed in and focused, setting goals, achieving those goals. And people look at that and they respect that. I know it helped me with college admissions. It's helped me in my military career. And yeah, I think it's a respectable accomplishment that I think youth should definitely strive to achieve.
So what kind of kid were you in high school? You were an athlete, and were you good in school too?
I was an athlete. I played soccer and cross country. I ran cross country, but I think I was more maybe a non-traditional athlete in the sense. I was really big into bicycles and actually into BMX racing. That was my life as a kid for a long time. Raced nationally. I was a state champion down in Alabama for a few years. I was definitely an athlete in that regard. Academics, kind of an average student, B, C student, nothing to write home about. But enjoyed my time in high school for sure. some might say I enjoyed it a little more than others, but yeah, it was definitely a good time.
So did you get any scholarships to go to college?
I did. So my mom is actually a college professor. She's a pharmacy professor. And so when I was coming out of high school, I was actually going to high school in Iowa, which is where my dad's family is originally from. I was living with him at the time. And my mom was a professor at West Virginia University. And her being faculty at the school, I did receive a great deal on tuition, and I did receive a partial academic scholarship as well. So it was kind of a no-brainer going to school there. Yeah.
And WVU is a pretty great school. I'm a big Mountaineer fan, so.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Oh, man, I can't tell you. I run into Mountaineer alumni all over the place. I ran into in Afghanistan, even ran into one of the ANA wearing a West Virginia hat. I'm not sure who along the way gave it to him, but yeah, great school, great community. Yeah.
So now tell me your recruiting story, because everybody has a different recruiting story. Tell me yours.
So I was actually in college for 4 years before I joined ROTC. I kind of had a different glide path. I was a graphic design major. I was looking to pursue a different career after college. And things started changing. Doors started closing. I kind of started seeing the writing on the wall and realized maybe that wasn't for me. Didn't exactly fit into the art school program. And, you know, I had those military influences from my family. My granddad had been telling me for years, you know, hey, ROTC, it's the way to go. When I decided to change my major from graphic design, I started pursuing a leadership program at the university where there were a lot of the cadets that were at the Army and Air Force ROTC program at the school. They were in these classes and just kind of started talking to them. And one thing led to another. And I realized that maybe, hey, this is something that I would be really interested in. So I talked to my granddad and he said, hey, don't go talk to the recruiter down the street, because he'll tell you whatever you want to hear to get you to sign. He's like, go talk to your ROTC recruiter. He'll shoot you straight and get you moving in the right direction. Well, that ROTC recruiter is going to tell you everything you want to hear to get you to sign with him anyway. So across the hall from the ROTC recruiter was the National Guard recruiter as well. And as soon as I sat down with the ROTC recruiter, he's like, oh, hey, we have this program, this simultaneous mission program, I believe what it's called, the SMP program, where you're a contracted cadet and you're also serving in the National Guard at the same time. Upon commissioning, you know, wherever you rack and stack in the order of merit for commissioning officers, if you branch active duty, your obligation to National Guard is no longer. If you don't branch active duty, then you'll serve in the National Guard. So National Guard recruiter had told me, hey, we've got this thing, National Guard Special Forces. We've got a unit here in West Virginia. It'd be a great learning experience for you. If you'd like to join National Guard, yeah, we could probably get you into that unit. At the time, I really didn't know much about the Army. I told the recruiter, hey, I want to fly helicopters and I want to go to Ranger School. And the ROTC recruiter told me, well, if you want to go to Ranger School, you know, aviators don't really go to Ranger School often, but if you want a shot at Ranger School, branch infantry, you're guaranteed a shot. So I said, well, hey, what's infantry? They kind of explained to me what it was. And, I was like, well, yeah, hey, you know, I grew up in the woods and, you know, I enjoy, you know, sleeping on the ground and all these things. And so I just gravitated to it and really just got into the books, started learning tactics, really just latched onto it with that. And, yeah, I guess, I signed up and yeah, the rest was history. I basically served myself on a silver platter to the Army.
So you went in as an officer?
I did. Yeah. So, I commissioned, onto active duty, as an infantry officer. Yeah. I went down to Fort Benning and went through the infantry school, ranger school, all that good stuff. I was actually for my first assignment, I was a mechanized infantry platoon leader in Korea with 2nd ID.
That deployment sucks.
Oh yeah, man. I've never experienced cold like I've experienced cold in Korea, but I've also never experienced heat and humidity like I have in Korea either. But no, it was a great time. I mean, my time in Korea, I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, the guys that I served with there, I've got lifelong friendships. The leadership that I had there too. One of my greatest mentors, even to this day, was my first battalion commander there. So yeah, I really can't complain. It was a great opportunity. But yeah, then on the after Korea, you know, on the back end of that hardship tour, you get your choice of assignment. I was really gunning for a shot at Ranger Regiment. I went to Korea thinking, yeah, hey, I can get my 12 months of PL time, drop my Ranger packet, try to, you know, go over there. Unfortunately, you know, this was, you know, during the height of the GWAT, and I was told, hey, you got a strong packet. It's not strong enough. You know, you don't have combat experience. So I contacted HRC, since you do get choice of assignment on the back end of that trip. And I said, hey, I want to go to the first light infantry unit going to Afghanistan in the next 6 months. What do you got? So they told me, hey, you got three options: Drum, Riley, or Carson. And I was like, well, that's kind of a no brainer. I love Colorado. I love the mountains. I'm going to Fort Carson. So yeah, I ended up going to a light infantry brigade there. And that was an amazing experience. Again, great group of guys, was able to go down range. Had a great chain of command from my company commander up to the brigade commander. They're all guys that had spent time in Ranger Regiment. I think all the 11 series lieutenants in our battalion were Ranger qualified, just a racked and stacked solid group of guys, had an amazing deployment. So yeah, that was a great initial, I guess, foundation to my time in the military as an infantry officer.
All right, so let me ask you a question, because I had Lieutenant Colonel Five Code on here a couple months ago, and we were talking about the mentality it takes to get through selection. And like I always said, you know, like as I talked to a lot of Navy SEALs and like you guys, Rangers and Green Berets, Delta Force, and in my mind, I always pictured some guy that was like 6'5", jacked with like 3% body fat. And then when I meet a lot of the guys, it's like meeting my accountant, and I'm like, okay. So because you guys are a different kind of people. I mean, I've never met so many of you guys that are so well read and so versed on a lot of different subjects. So what was it like, you know, because there's a lot of guys I'm sure that you watched, you know, ring the bell, quit. What was it that you were just like, just one more rep, I just have to do one more sit-up or one more push-up? What was it about you that made you pass through the ranks and get selected?
Man. I think you really just need to learn how to, or maybe have a mentality where you're able to kind of partition your goals. If you're able to set lofty goals, stay focused, and develop a decisive plan to achieve that goal, you know, that's one aspect of it. But then to be able to partition, you know, that plan or that glide path, you know, and kind of break it up, I think that's important. I think that a lot of it might just have to do with a competitive nature that I've had since I was a kid. Playing sports, and then, you know, later racing BMX bikes, and just having that very competitive nature, I think kind of laid the foundation for me wanting to not only challenge myself, but set goals and achieve them. So really, it is a mindset, but it's
I just it's amazing how the people that I've talked to that have gone through it now, and I would never, if I met them outside, I would have never known that they were you know, some special operators. And, you know, one thing I love about you, because, I've actually talked to some of the guys that you actually went through basic and selection with, just to get to know what kind of guy you are. And a lot of the guys would say that you were like the motivator for a lot of guys. That, you know, it was like, if shit had to get done, even though if it was a crappy detail, you'd still make it fun. And your guys loved you. So talk about that. You know, being a leader is, you know, there's a difference between, you know, being somebody that people want to follow and somebody just marking you as a leader. So can you talk about what being a real leader is like?
Yeah. So I think that and the Army does a great job of this. I think that shared suffering really brings a lot of people together. And, you know, you can take it one of two ways. You know, you can really get poopy about it and get upset. You can really just harp on how hard and negative things are, or you can keep it light. You can have fun. You can make fun of how bad it really is. And if you're able to kind of maintain that optimism, that glass half full mentality, it really brings people up. And in times of true suffering or really tough times, be it in a schoolhouse environment, a training environment, you know, real world deployment environment, guys will rally around that. And, you know, when you're around a group of like-minded individuals, you have a tendency to kind of play off each other's strengths, play off each other's weaknesses. And, you know, I think that's the best way to really build people up and continue driving forward, is just to stay positive and not get too wrapped around the axle when things get tough.
And one thing I love about you is, one thing I heard people, you know, you say, and also other people say, talking about organized chaos. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I love, you know, because like, even when I was in the military, it was like when stuff hit the fan, it's like everything kind of slowed down for me. Instead of speeding up, everything kind of slowed down. And I kind of, when the crap hit the fan, I was like, I'm okay with this. I can deal with organized chaos. Yeah. So talk to us about organized chaos in your opinion.
Yeah. So, there's something about just kind of uncluttering a problem and bringing some structure and order to it, that I enjoy. There's just something I take great pleasure in being able to do that. But I think that with organizing that chaos, you know, especially when you're working in a high risk environment, or you're working, you know, in an organization where there's real consequences, there are real risks involved. And, you know, as leaders, we talk about risk management and risk mitigation. But within that chaos, you know, there is a level of risk that you need to be comfortable with assuming in order to achieve, you know, your objective, or, you know, complete the mission. If you're able to do the best that you can, plan within the constraints and restraints that are presented to you, maximize your ability to mitigate or manage that risk. It's going to empower you to kind of jump into the fire or continue moving forward, even when things are going crazy and, you know, maybe it's not working out how you would like it to, or you've got five or six different moving pieces that are in your face you have to address now. So just having that frame of mind where you're able to step back, assess the situation for what it is, and really kind of compartmentalize those problems so that you can organize that chaos. That's probably the best way I could say. I address or kind of perceive that.
Organizing chaos. How many years did you do in the military?
I served 12 years on active duty, and before that, the 2 years in the National Guard as a cadet.
Now, you know, a lot of people think, you know, once you get to your 10-year mark, you know, if you're in for 10, you might as well be in for 20. So what was your mindset like when you decided to get out?
I never really wanted to do a full 20 in the military. I saw my time in the military as a duty. I wanted to serve. I felt a calling to serve. But I also saw it I wanted to improve myself professionally and personally. And I knew that I wanted to, at some point in the military, pivot and build on those experiences in the military as a civilian business owner. Let's see.
Because like a lot of guys that I talk to, and girls, you know, well, even though we're in the military and we're all hoo-ha-hoo-ha and hardcore and all that, you know, we get used to getting paid on the 1st and the 15th. You know, we get used to getting paid BAQ, BAH, TRICARE. Mm-hmm. And then once you hit the streets, you know, the military does not care about you one bit. And a lot of people that I talk to, when they get out, you know, they either want to start a t-shirt company, a hat company, liquor, or coffee. And then 6 months later, they're in $10,000 in debt and don't know what the hell just happened. Mm-hmm. So when you got out, what was your transitioning like?
I actually had a really good transition experience. So, you know, I was an officer in Special Forces. I was at 10th Special Forces Group at Fort Carson. And the unit, I kind of saw where things were moving and shaking with my career. I, you know, was kind of looking to my left and my right. I was looking one, two, and three levels up. And I just was kind of getting away from, you know, my team time was done. I kind of ping-ponged in and out of some staff positions. And I just, sitting behind a desk just wasn't really for me. And so I kind of raised my hand. I was like, well, hey, you know, I'm going to go to grad school while I'm still, you know, on active duty. And this is kind of my plan. You know, I want to go to grad school. I'm going to, you know, develop a business plan. I want to go on and be an entrepreneur. And the guys at 10th Group were very supportive of that plan and really allowed me to pursue that. So once it came time to actually transition, 10th Group had developed a transition program. It was like a workshop kind of thing. It was like, I don't know, 2-3 days long, something like that. And it was basically similar to like the Army's SFL TAP, but it was focused more towards SF guys and operators. And I took a lot from that program. You know, I was able to get involved with some nonprofits that really provided some help with kind of steering the direction that I wanted to go post-military. Was able to find some great mentors in the civilian sector who really became champions of, you know, what I was trying to do and really getting behind, you know, my business plan. And I also maximized some of the resources from SFL TAP. There's a the career skills program that they offer, I believe is what it's called, where you can basically do an internship while you're still on active duty with a business or company within whatever industry it is you want to get into post-military. So I was able to intern for 3 months with a local high-end automotive and restoration shop here in Colorado Springs that became an excellent opportunity for me. I learned so much from these guys, everything from the technical side of maintenance and restoration to just kind of the daily operations of the shop and the business itself. And that turned into a working partnership after the military, where the owner of the shop actually was and is still renting space to me where I'm able to springboard and launch my business. So yeah, the transition process for me was very beneficial. And I think I have to say, not only was it beneficial because of the mentorship and the opportunities that were provided to me, but my mindset going in where I wanted to maximize every opportunity available to me in order to create the best plan and the best foundation, leaving the military and then jumping into the civilian sector. And then from there, just launching. So, yeah, it was actually a very, very good experience for me.
Now, you know, I'm a big Shark Tank guy. I love Shark Tank. And one thing I love when anybody gets in front of them, you know, they tell them, you know, if you do not have a business plan, you have a hobby. You do not have a business. So tell us, because I think one of the best things about military personnel is we all know, you know, we all know what a 9-line is. So, but I think a lot of times we forget when we get out that in order to start a business, you definitely should have at least a 1-page business plan. So what was your, you know, sitting down and writing out a business plan? What was that like?
My business plan was definitely a little more involved. So I went to grad school and was accepted into an MBA program through a University of Colorado here in Colorado Springs. And I jumped into grad school knowing that was going to be the focus of my studies, would be my business plan, and it would be developing that business plan and strategy going forward. So I think I used grad school as a forcing function to really carve out some time to develop that plan. You know, just being an infantry officer and then being a special forces officer, especially in special forces, I mean, that is what we do. You know, we plan, we strategize, we forecast. And so I'm not, and again, it's that, that's organizing that chaos. It's assuming that risk, but then managing and mitigating it. And I had time, and, you know, if I'm going to use, you know, the time available to develop the best plan available, I'm going to maximize that. And so I gave myself a good 2 years in that graduate program to develop that plan and develop that strategy. So yes, I do have the 1-page executive summary, but I maximized my opportunities with the GI Bill to go to grad school and really develop that plan over 2 years.
You know, and now a lot of people, you know, like Mike Tyson says, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. You know, a lot of people, you know, started businesses and then all of a sudden COVID hit and now they're hearing crickets. Like, mm-hmm. I have a friend, he's in the auto body business and he has cars sitting out there for sometimes 4 to 6 weeks just trying to get parts. So mm-hmm. talk to us about, you know, did you have to pivot during COVID and what did you have to do to survive this last year or two?
So yes, I had to pivot hard. So the primary focus of my business, although yes, I'm focusing on restoration and sales, but the primary focus of the initial business model was importation. So just a little backstory on the business, or I guess for some context. So the business model is importing, restoring, and selling classic Land Rover Defenders. Basically from Europe. So my time in Special Forces with 10th Special Forces Group was primarily in Europe. So I was able to build my network a bit while I was over there. I was able to identify some contacts and sources for these trucks. If anyone's familiar with these vehicles, they're very hard to find and very sought after in the United States. It was a very limited amount of them that were imported back in the 90s. So there's a high demand signature for these vehicles, but the importation process can be a little bit convoluted. It's difficult here and there for several different reasons I won't get into. But the primary focus of the business really was to scout these trucks in Europe and then import them over. Well, when COVID hit, travel was off the table. So I was dead in the water really with the importation stuff. As things kind of lightened up a bit with COVID, and the supply chain kind of opened back up with shipping operations and things like that overseas, availability of vehicles, is there, but you know, I can't be like that boots on the ground guy in Europe, inspecting, doing the handshakes and, signing the paperwork with the guys selling. So I really had to rely on those relationships that I built with some of those suppliers and some of those people on the ground in Europe, and then having them, send stuff over here. So I did have to pivot the business and decided to focus more on the restoration side of things. Fortunately for me, I'm still early enough in the business that things are still pretty fluid and I can stay flexible. I'm still pretty small in scale. So I really didn't have to adapt and overcome, too far, or didn't have to go too far down the rabbit hole, kind of to that point of no return. So I was actually very fortunate that I did have options, but you're right. Plan goes out the window after the first time you get punched in the face. And I think the big takeaway from that is the name of the game is adaptability, flexibility. You don't want to have a plan, stick to the plan. You'll end up just finding yourself fighting that plan. You really want to be able to stay flexible and adaptable, and you want to have your contingencies. You want to have that PACE plan that we all talk about in the military, that primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency. So in the event that you do have to pivot, shift, refocus, whatever it is, you have that second, third, fourth course of action that you can fall into and continue driving on.
Yeah, and I love that. Like we were taught, you fight with what you have, not with what you want. So sometimes you just have to figure stuff out. Now, talk to us about niching down, because you really niche down to the one set of vehicles instead of just saying SUVs or all this different stuff. So what made you focus down to that one niche? And do you think that serves you well being the big dog in that niche, because it's a smaller niche?
I think it does serve me well from a couple standpoints. One, I've been a Land Rover enthusiast for a very, very long time, since I was a kid. And it's just something I've been passionate about. And I think that, you need passion as a motivator, because, if you don't enjoy what you're doing or you don't believe in what you're doing, you're very quickly going to find excuses not to do it. And then that's when you start, your quality of products and services maybe will start to degrade as well. So I think passion is important. And this is something I've been passionate about for a long time. And specifically this style of vehicle. I think also when in the military, we kind of talk about span of control, right? You don't want to have, and even just by nature of kind of the structure of, you could talk about your basic infantry platoon, right? You've got a few guys on a fire team. You got that fire team leader, then you got your squad leaders in charge of those two fire team leaders. Then you got like your platoon leader, platoon sergeant, they're in charge of, 3 to 4 squad leaders. So you don't want to spread yourself too thin with your span of control. So when you're niching down, you really want to focus on being really good at maybe one or two or three things. You in essence can become a jack of all trades and a master of none, but that can also play to your detriment, because now you're spreading yourself so thin that you're just kind of like you're watering down every touch point you have with everything that you do. And you're not really, a subject matter expert at that one thing, providing that, that quality of good and service that the customer is demanding.
Okay, so now I have a question. Now, I'm sure there's people around you that is starting to see your success, and they're wanting you to mentor them. Do you mentor people also?
I do. Nothing formal, but I've had several cadets, young lieutenants, they at various points in their career, who've actually reached out to me via LinkedIn, and they just like, hey, I want to do what you did in the military, you know, how do I get there? Or even some of them just asking me some basic questions about the transition as well. You know, hey, how did you transition from, you know, military life? And, you know, hey, it looks like you've got it all together. Hey, how are you making this happen? You know, as a civilian and as a business owner, I can't say I have all the answers, you know, cause I'm building the plane in flight, you know, as we're moving along. But, yes, I feel that, as a leader and as an officer in the military, that's just, it's what we do. You know, we teach, coach, we mentor, and that's not just officers too. Anyone in the military, you know, as soon as you're in a leadership position, you know, you teach, coach, and mentor the people under you. And that doesn't stop. It shouldn't stop when you leave the military and take that uniform off. And so I'm honored that people do want to reach out to me and ask me questions. And I'm always available to at least provide my opinion or my insights. And I'll say this too, that I think a lot of that also comes from my dad and my upbringing. You know, like I said, he was a collegiate athlete. He was a quarterback. He just has these natural leadership abilities. And if you want it or not, my dad's going to give you advice, you know, and it's usually pretty good. And so I kind of take that at heart and want to do the same. Just, if people want to reach out to me for mentorship or just information or questions, I'm always available to answer.
Okay. So talk to us about what you got going on now and how we can support your mission and how we can get in touch with you.
What I've got going on right now, it is my business, Defender Imports. We focus on importing, restoring, and selling classic Land Rover Defenders. That is my primary focus right now. You know, I'm still in kind of the infant stages of the business. You know, I technically started the business in April 2019, but I was still on active duty. I was in grad school. It was kind of a side hustle. It's a part-time gig. We didn't really launch as a full-time operation until the beginning of this year. You know, I just separated from the military back in November 2020. So, you know, it's still in its infant stages, but, definitely I've got some prospects on the horizon. I've got some great, mentorship, opportunities, that I think are going to be great going forward, kind of developing that glide path, scaling the business up and kind of expanding. The off-roading and kind of more specifically the overlanding industry, basically just kind of the vehicle-based travel overland, is a booming industry. It's become very popular in the United States. There's a lot of room for penetration, a lot of room for development. So focusing solely on the importation and focusing solely on the restoration side of things might not, you know, might want to expand to some other aspects of that in the future, but that's what we got going on right now. As for getting a hold of me, I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn. We have a website for the business. It's all my contact information is there, but basically it's just a placeholder. The website itself is under construction right now.
All right. So now last question I ask everybody, and cause I ask the question and I get ask 1,000 people, I get 1,000 different answers. You know, we live in a crazy world. I got small kids. So they're homeschooling and we got parents sometimes working two jobs, maybe driving Uber just to put food on their kids' mouth. So we live in a crazy time. So if I ask somebody to do something and the average person to do something in 7 days, they probably never going to get to it. But if I ask somebody to take an actionable step in the next 24 hours, they're more likely. So if somebody is struggling in their business, what is something they can do in the next 24 hours to start to right the ship?
Mm-hmm. I think self-assessment and self-reflection is important. You know, in special forces, you know, we talk about the soft imperatives, and that first soft imperative is always understanding the operational environment. I think it's important because not only are you understanding what's going on around you, but you're understanding how you are operating within that environment, projecting yourself out in that environment and being received. So if you're able to look inward and do some self-reflection, I think that's important. And, you know, that's kind of a broad recommendation, but kind of dial it in a little more focused. As you're setting objective, or I should say setting goals for yourself or developing a plan to achieve those goals, you want to partition that plan, kind of like what I was getting at before, and kind of set benchmarks, milestones, and what I like to call micro objectives along the way. If you're able to just sit down and kind of look at, maybe assess what you're doing, look at your end state, look at your goal, and then look at your path that you have laid to get to and achieve that goal. If it's not working out for you, have that hard conversation with yourself, you know, and shift your plan, you know, make adjustments. Like I said, you can't fight the plan. And if you're able to reassess maybe what some of those micro objectives are, it could be something as simple as, hey, in 6 months, I need to be doing this. Okay, well, what are you doing next week in order to achieve that goal? And you can start carving out and redefining that plan to achieve that goal. And that's something that you could easily do, I'd say, within a 24-hour span.
Thank you. I love it. Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. You know, I want to thank our sponsor, Office Allies, for taking care of us. And if you guys ever need an office assistant, everybody needs one, especially in this day of COVID. So definitely check out officeallies.va. Brother, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out. I truly appreciate you. And if there's anything I can do to help promote your business, it would be my honor.
Hey, Richard, I appreciate it. And I just appreciate the opportunity to be a part of the conversation. Truly grateful. Thank you. All right,
brother. Well, God bless you. I sent you a friend request on Facebook. That's where I do most of my damage, is on Facebook and then LinkedIn. So I appreciate you. And this will go out in the next couple of weeks, and I'll tag you, and because it's going to go out on 10 different platforms. So it's going to go out to like 1.4 million people. So,
oh, that's awesome.
So I just want to say thank you. And if there's anything I can do to help, I'm always there for you, brother.
Hey, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a great day.
God bless. Have a beautiful week.
All right. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.